is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. This program contains mature content and may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is another wonderful Tuesday evening. You are here with me on Kenny's Corner. It has been a delight to have you as my listening and my texting audience. It's been a series of things that have been happening in the media over the last. It's been feverish. People are feeling very antsy about things that are going on, but we have to take it one day at a time. And when you think that you have it bad, somebody out there has it a whole lot worse. I wanna pivot for just a moment, right? And in scrolling on TikTok, I came across this lady today. Her name is Vante. Her caption reads, "The mother that doesn't take education lightly or anything about my son lightly." The caption goes further to read, "I don't have a ride. Let him miss school today." And the mother is seen on one of those scooters. It may be electric, it may not be, but she has her son on her back or on the back of the scooter, and she has his two book bags on either side, and she is pedaling through the neighborhood to get her son to school. Ladies and gentlemen, within the sound of my voice, this is the tenacity of a mother. Because when the daddy don't do, the mother gets to do. And if anybody knows this lady, feel free to WhatsApp me. We are going to do something for her. If you know her, WhatsApp me, send me a message, get to me. We are going to do something for her. There's a gentleman that's on her page that said he will get her a vehicle. I am prepared to get her some gas vouchers. I may not have a lot, but what I do have, I'm willing to share because I'm a mother and I see the plight of this other woman. But on my show this evening, we are going to speak about disability and what type of essence. We're not going to talk about it, but oh, from the woe is me essence. It won't be that at all. This evening, we have on air with me, we have Miss Erin Brown, Connects Disability Advocate. She's an inclusion manager. Now, the reason I reached out to Erin was because before my mom left, right, my mom was bedridden. My mom was 6 feet tall. Any place she walked into a room, you knew my mother was there. I mean, she was a dancer. When the hully gully come on, my mommy and my daddy take the dance floor by storm. My mother always only wore floor-length dresses because she was so tall. And she always looked so regal, so elegant. Keep in mind that my mom's hair was short too at the end, right? But coming down to the end, mommy couldn't move. Mommy wasn't mobile. And I remember on one occasion she said, "Cookie, I don't like being like this." And I say, "Mommy, I know." And my mommy had the best skin. And she used to laugh and say, "Well, you know, we used to bathe and tie." And I used to crack when we say, "Boy, mommy, the skin nice." But the long and the short of it is that being in a situation like that, your mobility is cramped. And that's not necessarily how you want to live your life. When I see people parked in the handicap spots, I think I feel a sense of rage because you're able-bodied and there really is no reason for you to park there. So tonight, I want to talk, I want to have the honest conversation about inclusion, about advocacy, about what we can do for disability. And I don't know if disability is the right word. Erin, am I saying the right word? Is disability a negative connotation? Verbiage B.
Happy Gratitude Tuesday, everyone. Thank you so much for having me here. I am going to tell you, yes, disability is not a bad word at all. And so by using it as a person first language, which is a person or people with disabilities, or an identity first language, which is disabled person, disabled community, they are all correct.
So Erin, let me ask you something. Mm-hmm. I have so many questions. I would have had to disseminate some of the questions because some of them just were not what you would ask somebody in a regular setting. Mm-hmm. And so I want to jump directly into it. What does disability inclusion mean to you personally and professionally?
Oh, wow. Disability inclusion means to me personally, access. You know, we use the terms inclusion, equity, equality, diversity, access so much, but for many of us, they're just words. They don't really represent lived experiences of persons, or you may not have known someone or may have had a temporary disability due to incident or accident, or had somebody remove your access because they viewed you or valued you a certain way because of the way you looked or what they think you can do. And so disability inclusion for me personally is the gateway to access, to survival, to thriving, to sustainability, to innovation. And that's for me personally. But that then aligns with me on a professional level, because the three tiers as a disability inclusion consultant for me is to increase access opportunities for people with disabilities, not only for them alone, but for all persons, because access is a human right. So when you're thinking about access or disability inclusion, you might say to yourself, well, it has to be for a person who's using a wheelchair, or also known a wheelchair user, or someone who may be blind or low vision, or neurodiverse, which is those persons who may have learning disabilities, who may live with autism, who may have Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, all of these things we deem as, okay, they can't do all of these things. No, that is not what disability inclusion, disability is about. It's about being proud to represent, to present, and to thrive with a characteristic of a whole person, just like gender, race, religion, all of these things that we identify a human being as. Disability is a part of that. And it's time we embrace it and reframe it for persons.
And disability for us, Erin, means a myriad of things. Mm-hmm. Disability for us means exclusion in some instances.
Absolutely.
I think you're, Erin, on your side, your volume is very low. Can you turn your volume up, please? Because I'm getting messages that we can't hear you.
Okay, thank you. I'm usually very loud.
Okay. So am I. I feel like I swallow the speaker sometimes from my voice.
I'm hoping that this is better.
I'm hoping so as well. Now, I have so many questions here, Erin, but we have to get through these questions today because I feel like this is a conversation that needs. Can you share a moment in your journey that has truly defined your mission as an advocate? Or like, when you decided that you were going to be a disability inclusion consultant, how did you? Pardon?
No, I laughed.
Yeah. How did that come up? How did that come about? Because I mean, that isn't something that one regularly adjudicates. How did that come about, Erin? Tell us about that.
Sure. Well, it came about because I have expertise, I have credentials, I have life experiences, and I worked as a fashion, beauty, and entertainment consultant for so long with a disability. And it didn't matter. It didn't matter to my orange economy, my creatives, my colleagues, that I was an above-the-knee amputee. Yes, we were doing beach scenes, and I was climbing up hills with my crutches and my makeup bag, or I was supporting someone in hairstyling and finding talent and all of that. But I realized at that moment, I needed to move beyond just being this representation within this space. And so I wanted to be able to not only teach, I wanted to be able to empower, I wanted to change policies, enact policies. I wanted to be able to increase allyships for non-disabled persons who, for, as we say, you know, you have the heart for it, but you're not quite sure how you are going to be able to do it. For me, I would say I was doing this from birth. I grew up in a family that was not only athletically inclined, but it was, we were also civically involved, whether it was ministry to the church with my mother, or it was grassroots rendering services with my father, even in the political scene. He was all about ensuring people that everybody had a voice. And so I made a decision. We have all of these industries that are out there. Who is out there focusing on disability inclusion? Who is out there focusing on access, inclusion, and opportunities that benefit all of us? And I had to look at myself and said, I don't see anybody like me. I am looking for persons like me in my own community, in my own country. Maybe I need to be the change that I want to see. And therefore, I started a disability-led consultancy business. Nobody understood it at the time. And I still think many don't. But that has not stopped me from continuing to drive the conversation of access, inclusion, and opportunities. I hope you were able
Erin,
to hear me better.
So I have another question for you then, Erin. Mm-hmm. You mentioned policies and you mentioned making sure that there was an advocacy for it and that people really didn't understand what it meant, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But in my recent maneuvering through town, because I have an injury to my leg, mm-hmm. and so I find that maybe people will hire me, maybe people will not hire me with an injury, but mm-hmm. some people have hired me. I have had like 3 or 4 jobs in this span of 8 weeks with my foot being injured. And so I've had to make my own accommodations, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I had to call and ask a friend who works at Bahama, Nicole Henderson Smith, can you please get me a buggy or can I get a wheelchair? And she said, no, we don't do wheelchairs at Bahama. They had me on a scooter, baby. And I had a little horn and I would honk the horn like, doot, doot, as I was coming through, right? Find that people are not inclusive of persons mm-hmm. that have disabilities. Mm-hmm. And because it may take a little bit longer and because you may have to do a little bit more maneuvering, people have a very, very short tolerance. Yeah. So this brings me to one of my other questions. Do you believe that the Bahamas is ready to elect or appoint leaders with visible or mm-hmm. invisible disabilities? Because we all have disabilities mm-hmm. that need to change for it to become a reality. You know, sometimes we say, well, in order for somebody to know what's like to have a child with ADHD or Tourette's or mm-hmm. or Down syndrome or mm-hmm. or whatever other ailment there may be, right? Mm-hmm. It's only because your foot is in it that you understand.
Yes.
Do you think in the Bahamas we are ready to elect or appoint leaders with visible or invisible disabilities? And what needs to change for that to become a reality?
I love this question. I love it. What tells us that has not already happened? What has happened is we have within our community persons who do not proudly self-identify as a person living with a disability, whether it's a visible one like myself, an amputee, or it's a non-apparent, hidden, invisible one that someone cannot see with the naked eye. I think what has to happen is we now need to make and integrate and promote and present a space that is safe to say that I am that person. One of the things I love to talk about, because persons always ask, you think you'll ever run for prime minister? But you know, if you run, I would suggest you wear like your prosthetic and like hide your leg, because, you know, people don't really, they ain't really perk up to you if you lose somebody, or they might not trust their vote on that. And I smile, because if I recall, our first prime minister had an accident playing cricket and he was wearing a prosthetic eye. So haven't we already had it? We've had it. Have we shared that? Is that something that we're proud to share? Is it something that we're not like everyone else in around the world? We have removed disability, lived stories, characteristics, actions, innovations from our innovators, our researchers, our history makers, our nation builders. We have successfully done it. Many presidents of the United States had disabilities. Very rare you would hear people talk about it in the history books. So I would say we have already done it. Now, what needs to change is we need to normalize it. We need to normalize it to a space where you see that person's value, all of their value in their voice, in their lived experiences, in their expertise, in the way that they show up authentically. We need to now start valuing that. And the only way to start is a self thing. We ourselves have to be proud to say, yes, I live with a disability. And a lot of persons say, why do you start with that? Why do you start and say you're a disabled woman? Why do you start and say that you're an above-the-knee amputee? Why do I need to know that? You need to know that because that is part of who I am. And when you can not only receive that, accept that, value that, when you can do that, then we can absolutely move on to the other stuff. Because unconscious biases are real. We have our own thought systems where a lot of us think certain ways. And like you said, if you don't live it, you surely don't know about it. But you have those persons who are children with disabilities. Those children are now adults with disabilities who they have not taught how to independently live, who they have not helped to like amplify their voice or how to advocate. And but isn't that a goal of a parent? And Kenny, if you are struggling or persons are being apprehensive of hiring you because you have a temporary disability and you're using adaptive devices and equipment, that's everybody. Whether I am a non-disabled person, it ruffled there, right? So we're not going to take it on to say that is the only reason why it may be for that person, but we don't move in that energy. As a disabled person, as a disabled entrepreneur, if it's one thing I know that works for anyone, especially the marginalized groups, we must show up authentically.
Now, Erin, you mentioned that you are an amputee, mm-hmm. right? And you also mentioned the fact that we are persons living with these various disabilities. Do you think that you can't hide your disability?
No, I can't.
You can't hide that.
And I don't.
You cannot hide it, mm-mm. right? I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. We have persons that are sitting members. We have persons that are in our community that have children with special needs. Mm-hmm. Is that the proper term that I'm using, Erin? I want to be correct.
Well, special needs came from special education. If you're speaking more towards education, I would use it. But if you're talking about okay. children with disabilities, then I would encourage you to use the person first language.
Okay, so why is it, do you think there's a stigma when you have a child that has autism or mm-hmm. a child with any type of disability? What mm-hmm. is there the mother shame? What is there an outreach center for people with disabilities? Mm-hmm. Is there somewhere where you can go and offload and say, hey, like I have friggin' had it. Like I cannot do
I
this
tired.
Today. I
tired.
Like the man said, I tired. Is there a place that you can go?
So listen, What we find is when you are a parent with a non-disabled parent with children with disabilities, you become their voice. You become their advocate, their allies, because by default, as a parent, especially an active and nurturing and empowering parent, that is what you're going to do. You're going to step up to that role and you're going to figure it out. What happens, though, is we tend to do it in silos. We tend to keep it to ourselves. We tend not to share our struggles with our family members. We tend to not do much. We tend to just chop it up to, well, my child lives with a disability, so that's just what it is. I acquired a disability at the age of 24 due to bone cancer. And my lived experience was 24 years of my life, I lived as a non-disabled person. So I never really had to think about my access. I literally did everything, played sports, traveled, was in the community. I did whatever I felt like doing. I made up my mind to do it. Were there barriers? Yes, there were barriers, but I figured it out. I asked for help. I did all of that. When I acquired the disability and they removed my leg, the minute I woke up, it was like access went poof. Everybody all of a sudden, well, what are you going to do? How are you going to work? Do you even still want to finish education? Or there's nothing for you to do in life. How are you going to have the whole conversation just spinned on his head? And I was lost. I was like, my gosh, it's a leg. It's a leg that I no longer have to tote around. If I kept it, I would have not been here. But God graced me so. With even with an amputation, I am still here. So my mindset was very different. But then I became the disabled parent with non-disabled and disabled children. And so I started to even have guilt with myself. I was like, well, jeepers, all this talking these people doing, you think I's a good mother? You think I gonna do well for my kids? You think we gonna be able to survive? And I had to catch myself. Because I am still the Erin Brown that grew up in Grand Bahama, that loved sports, loved outdoors, had expertise, had a desire to learn more, to do more, to still play sports. So what I sitting here talking with the other people thinking about? Has it been challenging and full of barriers? Absolutely, that's life. That is life. But what I find is if you are a parent and you have funds, especially if you have disposable income or access to insurance and all of that, you tend to hide or you tend to provide in a very masking way. You would find, oh, I will send you to the best schools and I will give you all the opportunities you need, but we might not necessarily identify with a disability. My child doesn't have a disability. What happens is when that child now grows up and they're independently living, they're now struggling with their own identity because they're seeing, or they may see, persons with disabilities doing amazing things. And they're relating to them, but they're not relating to them, right? But the journey of parenthood, the journey of motherhood, fatherhood, or even the journey of growing up is not textbook perfect. We do not only to survive and thrive, but we do what we think is best. Whether we are a parent, an ally, whether we want to make sure they have opportunities, or whether we just can't do none of the above, so we ask for help. Or you asked about a group. You asked about where can these people go? Sometimes, Kenny, you got to make that group. You got to create that tribe. Because everybody's story and lived experience is very different. When you find a tribe that values that, understands that, and do not define you like you should act this way, look this way, be this way, then you have found home. Now expand it. Share it. Make sure other persons have it, other families have it. So that's how I feel. We're always going to have guilt. And we're going to have guilt with whether we did the right thing or if we did the wrong thing in our eyes. But the fact that you did something, you need to give yourself grace because at that time, that was the tools that you had and you gave your best.
Erin, I have some texts coming in. It says, great show, hon. Erin is an excellent motivator. Enjoyed your show last week. Erin is very strong, super proud of her. This is another message. GBI strong. Aaron is in you, Aaron. Hi. Kenny, you and Aaron should do something together.
Okay.
Is that because we're bald? Is that it?
Hello, we're blonde. We're blonde and bald, Zoling. We're dialing down magic.
Look, just look at us, right? Let me go to these other questions. What barriers still exist that limit political participation or civic engagement of persons with disabilities in our country?
Well, the one barrier that will always exist, and whether you're a disabled electoral candidate or not, is funding. The money. But if we're going to be very specific for those candidates, those are disabled candidates or electoral persons, or who really are taking advocacy into activism or lobbying, your biggest critic will be yourself. You're going to deal with the barriers, like I suggested already, persons not valuing your voice. They don't think that what you're saying makes sense. And a lot of times I find people say that can't be true. Life in the 21st century, that is what we're dealing with. You're going to find that these barriers exist for all electoral candidates. What your specific barrier, honestly and truly, will start off with is yourself. Because if you sit there, as I shared my story, I sat there and I let people and thought how I should act get into me, I became distracted. I wasn't even focused on the target. Like I totally not understood the assignment after that. And so I exhausted myself in all of those thoughts. When I started to become laser focused and I decided that I was going to show up, whether I knew if they had a ramp, if there was an elevator, whether the public bus would take me or not, I was going to figure out a way. I am that person who's not afraid to ask. And so the barriers that will exist, even for any candidate, including a candidate with disabilities, you have to be prepared to break them down, bust through. But the biggest thing, if I'll be absolutely honest, is the funding. Because, honey, when you find somebody who believe in you and they could invest and say, let's do this, you're not going to find a lot of barriers. You're going to start having to look inward and making a decision on how do I want to make that change? How? What is it that I am going, how am I going to do it? Who am I going to touch? Why am I touching them? Your barriers will initially stem from yourself. And that's a hard one because we like to throw it on other people. So I know you may have been expecting me to say A, B, C, D, E, F, G, but the reality of it is as a human being, you're going to go through barriers and you're going to have to make the intentional decision to be purposeful and strategic in your steps. I'm sure that's not what they were expecting, Kenny.
No, I totally expect anything from you because you're not the typical woe is me. You're not the typical responder, you know. Mm-hmm. And there are a series of events that shape and mold us, and we must come from.
Yes, so, you got to get buried, and you got to be able to come out of that mud and that dirt.
I totally respect your views on that. What are some of the biggest misconceptions people have about persons with disabilities? From a personal perspective, Erin, from your vantage point, because sometimes people say, why me? But why not you? Or some people say, well, I never thought it would have been me. And then your life is changed in a blink.
Yes. Yes. Some of the misconceptions is one, I don't think they think we're funny. I think I'm quite humorous. Also, I feel that the misconception is we're naive. We're naive, we're gullible. Even for those persons who may be living within the neurodiverse community where they may have delayed processors, those individuals' IQ will put all us to shame. And so never think that we are naive or we are gullible. It may present to you a certain way, but the understanding and the response of how we as a disabled person have to adapt or flex in life is very real. A misconception is we can't do hard work. We can't be focused. We can't be driven. We can't be innovative. A lot of what we're using today, you know, all y'all who got them Apple phones and y'all saying, hey, Siri, I want you to know that that was created for not non-disabled persons that needed to use hands-free application of their handheld devices.
And so Siri wasn't for able-bodied people.
Siri wasn't for non-disabled people. No, ma'am.
Amazing. But these Apple people have taken it over, right?
Not only taking it over, that is what innovation is about. Innovation is about ensuring the most of all of them have access and use to it. And that's what makes things viable, sustainable, successful, productive. We're using adaptive equipment. We're using resources, tools. We're learning things that are helping us to critically think, to figure out, to problem solve, to enhance our production, to enhance our productivity, right? We are naturally using those things as a human being. That does not change for a person with a disability, other than society has intentionally left us out. And so who is really the barrier, or who is really the issue, or who do we now need to look to resolve that? The person with the disability, or the thought process that you're only making things for a certain demographic to use versus maximizing your target market, your GDP, listen, dollars and cents is what has moved people, right? So what Apple and Android and all of them do, all these apps that people has used to transcribe, to voice speech to text, text to speech apps, all of these were made specific handheld devices for the disabled community, for persons who needed additional support, yet all of us are using them. They're making millions of dollars off of it. And there's nothing wrong with that. But be transparent and have the knowledge that that is what makes things successful. So the misconception is if you're a disabled person, all of these things cannot be afforded to you. You cannot be the creator. You cannot be the person that can break a record, can set a record, can play sports, can go up into space. Now we have Aisha Bo, who's going as the first Bahamian to go up into space. But do you know that we have a gentleman who is an above the knee amputee who is also going into space with his prosthetic? We are the innovators. We are the risk takers, the disruptors. So all of those misconceptions needs to not only be destroyed, they need to be forgotten about.
So Erin, you mentioned Aisha. Do you think that there's ever going to be a room in space for you?
Done. She done secured me a spot. She didn't know it.
Man, between her taking rake and scrape and securing you a spot, there got to be some space for me.
I'm telling you, space for all of us. Why?
Erin, I don't know if I could be jammed up in that. And like, you know, those astronauts ended up being in space for 9 months.
Erin, tell you, but Bahamian people, Kenny, we ain't jammed up nowhere. They have to make something. They gonna have to make something very separate for us Caribbean people, for my island people, because we ain't jamming up nowhere.
We can need real food. We can need some corn salad in space. We can need it. Erin, we can need it. Erin, we can eat it. Now, I have a caller on the line. Chris, is the caller still there?
Hello.
Chris, do we still have a caller? All right. Hi, good evening, caller. You're on.
Good evening. How are you doing, Ms. Campbell?
I'm wonderful, sir. How are you?
Good, man. Good. I caught the middle of the conversation, because you know tonight is my church night and I run late.
Yes, I know.
You're talking just about women with disabilities or people in public in general?
No, sir. This is straight across the spectrum.
I know I heard where she said that she lost one of her legs.
Yes, sir. I'm going to
give you my
amputee
story in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
I was at a particular place one night,
mm-hmm.
and I drove my car home by myself. I was by myself. I drove home from Soldier Road to Cowpen Road.
Mm-hmm.
And when I woke up that morning, the next morning, I couldn't see.
Mm.
This is over 6 years now. I'm still legally, and I'm now considered now legally blind.
Yes, sir.
I drove home that night.
Mm-hmm.
And that morning, I couldn't see.
Yes.
So what I'm trying to say is that can happen to anybody.
Yes, sir.
Don't. One time ago, people used to scorn people with disability and have negative. Boy, trust me.
Mm-hmm.
That can happen. I'm a witness to it. That can happen to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And people, some people that knew me a long time, they would see me certain places. Because I try to tell them I'm, you know, brand name and, you know.
Yes. Yeah. Sure.
And I'd sit down and people would say, oh, look at him, blah, like he ain't know me. Little that they know that I can't even see no more.
Yes.
But I never let that hold me down and throw me back to say, fall off.
No.
You know, and with my situation, with your situation, you can dress yourself. You can go and pick out what you want to eat. You can do your thing. I now,
mm-hmm.
my son, when I'm home now, is my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell him, brother, I trust you. Whatever you pick out for me to put on, I wear that. I say, you know how your dad dressed? You know how your dad used to dress? You know my clothes. And I've never heard one person yet, and I can brag mm-hmm. about that, say, boy, you ain't put together. Boy, for a blind man, you sure be dressed up. I said, I don't have nothing to do with my dressing has nothing to do with my sight.
Mm-hmm.
And in closing, as long as you can accept your problem or your mm-hmm. I don't even call it a problem no more.
Because it's
I call
not
it
a problem.
Challenge now. As long as you could accept your challenge, you're
mm-hmm.
straight. You're straight. Once you can accept it, you're straight.
I thank you so much.
But could I tell you something? I never knew that about you. I never knew that.
Ain't much people know that. No, ain't much people know.
Because
I can't see nothing. And what made me did the first operation on my eyes was my granddaughter. Catch
mm-hmm.
this little joke. Me and I was sitting down to the coffee table. She said, Pa, let's color.
Mm-hmm.
So we was coloring. So I colored out of the line. Now, mine was going good little while. Now, 4 years, she was before then. And she said, Pa, you got to color in the line, you know, because if you don't color in the line, Miss Brown could knock you on your knuckles. That must be what the teachers do to them in school.
Yes.
And I continued coloring again. And I colored out the line again.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter was in the room, which is her mommy, was in the
mm-hmm.
room. My granddaughter said, Pa, you can't see it. But my granddaughter felt bad. I said, no, she don't know I can't see. She never knew I couldn't see.
Right. Wow.
She never knew that.
That is
then me and her together, she will hold me. She don't want nobody hold my hand. Pa, watch her, Pa. She don't want nobody hold my hand. Once she is around, she is my eyes.
Yes.
You see,
I love that.
On national radio, I asked God here today, give me my sight back.
Mm-hmm.
Just so I could see my granddaughter. I've never saw her before. I would love to see everybody tell me how pretty she is and how dear she is. I'd want to see her for myself. If my eyes were to open today,
mm-hmm.
and her and two other little girls together,
mm-hmm.
if she don't say nothing, I can't pick hold.
Yes.
Now, the minute she open her mouth, she say anything. If she sneeze, I know that's her.
Oh, boy.
You know?
Oh, boy. That is amazing. I
yeah,
thank you for always
I
calling
God,
in.
Man.
I hope you make church on.
Yeah, I thank God, man. You
yes.
know?
God is good. I love you for that. Thank you. But tell me something. What is your real name?
My name is Julian Ferguson.
Okay. Julian Ferguson.
A lot of people
would
have known me from the bus. I used to operate some buses one time.
Okay.
Yeah. I had a bus
company Mr. Ferguson. Thank you so much, Mr. Ferguson.
I don't let it... See, at first, you said something earlier, what I said. Why me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then my pastor put into me, Julian, why not you? God could trust you with this. Certain people would have killed themselves. God can't trust certain people with this.
That is true.
I always believe Christ is in my crisis. And he is going to pull me out. So it's no big... My biggest thing was when I could have accept that I lose my sight. Once I could have done that, I'm happy. You know, and I am still active in the Junkanoo organization that I'm a part of.
That's
which
right.
is the Red Lance Soldiers. I am still going to rush this year. But
that's right.
I'm going to line.
That is absolutely.
Listen, Mr. Ferguson. Mr. Ferguson, I am going to come and look for you.
Hello. Take me with you.
Mr. Ferguson, no matter what it is that I'm doing for the parade, I am coming to look for you when Red Lance Soldiers come out the gate.
Would
I am coming.
You give me candy
my head
before.
Ball. Pardon me?
You give me candies before.
Take that.
I did?
Oh, my God.
Ferguson.
I have the scraper with the Red Lance Soldiers.
All right, I will come and see you, Mr. Ferguson.
Yeah,
and
okay,
thank you so much. Thank you so much, Mr. Ferguson. You have a blessed night.
Yes, but Kenny, can I tell you something? I'm so glad you shared that because we have this thought process that disabled persons just coming into Junkanoo or they've never had it. Do you know how many iconic disabled Junkanooers out there?
I do.
I want to hear their stories. We need to do a feature like, come on, man, because they exist and they are the heartbeat of their groups. They are the heartbeat of their families. And what Mr. Ferguson said is absolutely correct. When you accept who you are, things become easier.
We have a blind Bella. We have in one family, they have somebody that's in percussion that's also, I think he's going blind, I think as well. But we also have somebody that's in the Saxons who is partially deaf, that my eardrum. I can tell you a story about that another day. But that we do have somebody that's in our group that is completely tone deaf, and he is in the back line.
Listen to me.
I think it's amazing. It's an asset of the human, the resilient, if I may say so. Erin, we have another question here, and this question reads as follows: When you think about the youth, and when you think about youth advocacy, right?
Yes.
What are some of the contributions? Or what are some of the regular everyday language that you think that we could use to those people struggling to find their voice in terms of disabilities in a youth forum? Because they're younger persons that may be struggling.
Absolutely.
And they don't know how to navigate or traverse. You know, when my daughter went to Summit, there was a child that had disabilities and there was a sign that at the front of Summit that says no bullying. So it was inclusive.
Yes.
But are there signs for inclusivity now? Mm-hmm. Can you talk to me about the language that we should use for younger people?
So you would, in general, when you're speaking to any group and you consider there are factors that you consider their age, you consider their learning capacity, you consider what is your target, what is the goal, what is the agenda. That is something that you do in general when you're speaking to any audience, right? But when we're talking about the youth, for me, I love dealing with youth. What I love even more is when non-disabled youth and youth with disabilities are integrated together. It's not separate. It's not apart. It's not, oh, you got to go over there if that's who you're looking for, or, well, that's what you live with. No, no, you need to go to that side. No, representation matters. We send our children to school early for the main concept of socialization. Learning how to engage, how to communicate. Play is learning. Fun is learning. It is the same for youth and children with disabilities. Why remove them out of a space when the goal is to not only socialize, but to recognize that the differences in each and every one of us is designed purposely that way? Because we are all different. We are all differently abled. We are all able-bodied. So the language I would use, first and foremost, we need to change the space. The space cannot continue to be separate and apart. When we're having these programs and we're doing these youth outreach, we don't attract the youth with disabilities because we're not speaking their language. We're not talking about access. We're not talking about how we're going to play this game or what the goal is, whether it's motor skills or whether it's sight words. There are various ways you can do that. It does not always have to be the regular regimen of say what I say, do what I say, say it how I say it. For students or children who are deaf, they're not going to hear you say the word. So what do we have to do? We either have picture signs that have the words, right? We use sign language. For neurodiverse children as well, simple, colorful, textures, action, engagement, that draws and keeps their attention as well. The language itself at that age is basically the language we give to all children. Do unto others as you will have them do unto you. Person first language or identity first language, because you are teaching these children and you are teaching disabled children as well as non-disabled children the value of each other's differences. But in that age group, and even in the youth, to see somebody, engage somebody that looked like you. I was 24 when I became an amputee, and can I tell you? I looked for somebody like me. I looked for somebody like me. I started to ask stories. I started to think about people in my neighborhood, people in my family. And it was hard to find somebody like me. Can you imagine from a child, you are seeing, engaging, interacting with persons who are not only playing with you, looks like you, y'all are talking about the same things, or you are learning in a very inclusive and accessible way? I honestly think that language is one of the things that come as you go. The experience from a child of the story I told someone was there were two boys. One was deaf, one wasn't. They met at the beach every day that afternoon. They met at the beach. But this one time, the deaf child was in the water and something was coming towards the deaf child. And the other child who was non-disabled was screaming, "Hey, hey, hey, something is there." And that child could not hear him. He ran to that child and touched the child and said, "Something is there." That's the first day he noticed that the child was deaf. Because then the child said to him by using his hands, "I can't hear," basically tapping his ears. The parent then came and said, "Oh, yes, they're deaf." Now, mind you, they've played. He had no idea that the child was deaf. Did that change the next day when the child? No, it didn't. If anything, that child started to learn sign language. That child started to be more expressive with their face and showing and playing in different ways because for a person who is deaf, the visual component for them is very, very strong. Their hands are now their eyes. So they are like feeling things and they're expressing things with their hands, as with those who are blind. So, Kenny, when it comes to the youth, get them out and living life and learning. You don't have to sit there teaching them you're a disabled child. You really don't. You need to let them Be a child. Be a child. The rest will come.
Erin, I want to find out something from you. When we spoke with Mr. Ferguson, he said that his biggest issue was acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
There had to be a process for you. And if I'm out of line and asking this question, because I did not preempt you, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
You can just cut me off and we can move to another question. When did you realize that this is my lot in life? Like, was it a process when you had to go into the hospital and you said you woke up the next morning mm-hmm. and you said, listen, this is what it is. How does that work with children? How does that work with a husband? How does that work with being in a relationship?
Sure.
Because there's a massive adjustment, like for me, because trying to bathe with one leg,
Olay.
Jesus have mercy. Erin, I want you to know I had to ask for assistance.
Yes, ma'am. And you should.
Erin, I had to. Erin, and listen, and it got so good, I just kept asking for the assistance in the tub. I might as well tell you.
Them benefits.
Come on, Erin, don't talk it on the people radio. Erin, listen to me. Focus now.
Okay.
Erin, my mom had this stool thing at the house, right?
Yes.
So I said, Daddy, bring that for me so I could bathe. So
yes.
Daddy brought it and I put mm-hmm. it in the tub. But right. now I had the kitty corn in the tub. So I have to turn a particular way and then I can't mm-hmm. have the foot in the man, Erin,
no.
listen to me. But uh-huh. I asked for assistance from an individual. I got assistance in taking
Amen.
A bath, Erin. All right.
Mm-hmm.
But Erin, it complicates sex. It
mm-hmm.
complicates the act of sex. I mean, you have to find ways to do things.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I don't know if it complicates it. It might make it a bit more adventurous.
Erin, I digress.
I digress. Okay. So.
I with you 150% because you have to find apparatus in order to make certain things work. Now, what I want to know is like, how is it for you in your everyday life?
Yes. Yes. So. For me, when I was diagnosed with bone cancer and we did the chemo and we did all of those stuff and I requested to get my leg amputated. That's another long story, but I chose for the amputation. I was okay with it. I was okay with it because for a whole year while I was doing chemo, I had to wear a cast from my toe to my hip. So I was dragging this leg around that I couldn't really use. Because the bone was gone in the thigh and the knee was eat out from the cancer. And I was glad to get rid of it. What had happened was, though, prior to me getting my diagnosis, my mother passed at the age of 17, at my age of 17, from lupus. And so her is what I literally took with my cancer journey, watching her as a mother, because during my cancer journey, I was a mother. I was a mother. I had a 6-month-old when I was diagnosed. And for me, I had those moments when I was just thinking about, am I a good mom? Like, is it going to be okay? Am I going to survive? My mom didn't survive. I went through all of that stuff, right? But what I didn't do, once I made the decision that, okay, I'm going to help be an amputee, I didn't even really think about it no more. I didn't ponder on it. I just was like, okay, I'm an amputee. This is the 21st century. There's wheelchairs, there's crutches, there's all of these things I could possibly use. When I thought about a prosthetic and I saw the price tag of $50,000, I was like, okay, God, maybe that ain't my ministry. But, you know, there's other things that I could do. But I still wanted to play sports. I still wanted to be active. I still was very active in my son's life. And it's because I think for me, going through what I went through with my mom and going through the cancer journey of, I didn't run nothing. I run not a nan, not a thing. When your head hurts, you take a pill. That pill ain't work for me. When they tell me I wasn't going to be sick, oh, I was sick, honey. I had no control over nothing. So I built my mental work and I just saw life differently. What people saw as, oh, why me? I just was like, man, listen, this is just what it is. And I'm going to figure out a way how to do what I would like to do. So my battle wasn't that it was why me. I think the first time I said to myself, what is that guy's an amputee, right? Was when I was trying to teach my son as an amputee how to roller skate. When we walking, I walking with my prosthetic on, he got on the roller skates and I trying to pull my body to tell him how to fix his leg to do this roller skate. And that was the first time. He was, I think it was like maybe nine, five on, even six or seven, between six and nine. And I literally said out loud, mother sick, I's a whole amputee, why are you supposed to teach him? Now by this time, I done do the marathon, I done cycle, I done cycle for Ride for Hope. And I sit near talking, but mother sick, I's a whole amputee, because I could not effectively teach him how to roller skate. So for me, I never really struggled with why me. For me, it was more about in life, I have a decision. I either gonna sit here and look at all the things that I don't have, all the shoulda, woulda, couldas, and just sit here and do that, or I can make a decision. Is that all that is to life? And then I looked for my community. And that's why I said representation matter. For Mr. Ferguson, I wanted to say to him also was, even though his son is doing those things, Mr. Ferguson's hands is his eyes. And when he start to engage that more, he can know exactly what them shirts look like. He can know if it's buttoned down. He can know if it's a capri. He can know if the texture is corduroy or khaki. There's so much amazing things that are available to us when we start to view it and engage the tools and the practices, right? But we have to be prepared to do that because it's not easy. That assistance you asked for, most of us ain't got it. We got to figure out how we going to go in that shower, how we going to go in that tub and don't fall on top of our head. Now, I could tell you, I have fallen many times. God bless me because I never get up with a concussion, but I have fallen. I have been in relationships, they've failed. I've been in marriages, they've failed. I have loved, lost, all of that stuff. But why? Not because of my disability, because I'm human. Because I'm human.
That is so true, Erin, because we are human. We are in relationships and they fail. We are in marriages and they fail. And I think we have to know when it is time to leave. And it has nothing to do with disability, but it has to do with accountability in my eyes. If there's one takeaway, Erin, is if there's someone out there that is struggling, that is within the sound of our voices, what is the one message you want the public to take away from this conversation? Is it one of making sure that people with disabilities are included? Is it one for motivation? Because Erin, you are so positive. Many years ago, I met you for something else that we were too. Yeah. And you said, Kenny, I want you to stop. I was like, yes, right. Erin, you can do this.
That's right.
And I shouldn't say your disposition, but your momentum is so forward. Because yesterday I was blow. Mm-hmm. I was blowing and speaking to you yesterday, but thank you for yesterday. But if there is one message you want the public to take away from this conversation today, what would that be, Erin?
For those in my community, those who are living with disabilities, those who are dealing with challenges, I need you to know that your purpose outweighs your pain. Your voice, your presence, your thoughts, your ideas, they are valuable. They are valuable. We need them. Do not allow yourself to tell you otherwise, because you have been purposefully placed. You have been purposefully dealing because there are some muscles you need to grow. There's some things you need to learn. Don't keep it to yourself. Ask for help. We need your voice. We need your value. We need you to show up. And when I say show up, you ain't got to look like me. Like Kenny say, I's a bald head gal, but today, these days, my blonde ball head is now long, wavy, short, blunt. I mean, I know what you can get when you see me now. But why is that so? Because I have decided, as long as God has given me breath, and I've been diagnosed with another disability that will eventually remove my sight. Has that changed my trajectory? Has that changed my value, my purpose? No. Why? Because I know my value. I know my voice. I am willing to learn. I'm willing to empower. I'm willing to risk it all so that my communities, other persons like me, my family, my loved ones can do better, be better, and to have all that they need if at any time they acquire a disability or they just need additional support. It's there. So if you're listening to me, if someone is signing to you right now, if you saying I'm talking too fast and you're not sure what I'm saying, take these two words. You are a gift. Show up.
Erin, you said something, and I think everybody that is listening gasped, because I gasped as well. You just said that you're faced with something that eventually may take your sight.
Mm-hmm.
How did you know?
I was diagnosed with it during over the pandemic. And the funny thing about it is when the doctor diagnosed it, and I said, oh, okay, well, this could be interesting. She looked at me and she's like, well, what that mean? What you mean? I said, my life purpose is to help or to increase access, inclusion, and opportunities for people with disabilities. I am one of them. So all I am doing is learning. I am creating. I am ensuring that even when my sight goes, I still showing up, Kenny.
Erin, you don't know if it'll go. You don't know that, right?
Listen to me. My purpose is not to focus on if or when it will, because we know doctors could say one thing and God will say another. We know that. I've lived that. My purpose and my goal and me saying the preparation at the end of the day is, if I live my 3 scores and 10, you think my sight's still going to be the way it was when I was 24? You think them legs and them joints still going to work like they was working when I was 40? The goal is that with lifetime, I will continue to have access, inclusion, and opportunities, because the resources will be there. The people, the allies, would have ensured that they not only know what to do, how to do it, but they are consistently empowering and training and changing policies and increasing more entrepreneurial opportunities and having an inclusive, sustainable place for us who are over 1 million strong and growing every day in this world to continue to live until our last breath. That's all I'm saying. People are saying, you're speaking that on yourself. No, I ain't speaking it on myself. The reality of it is, whether it is today, I might take a drive home today and wake up tomorrow. You heard what Mr. Ferguson said? And it may be gone. But guess what? I still can show up to work. Someone got to drive me now. But I can tell you where my things is in my office. I know how to use the keyboard. I never used to look at the keyboard when I was typing. I know how to turn on that screen reader on my desk, that I ain't got to see the words. I ain't got to see what on it. It shall be read to me. I will still show up.
Erin, I am never speechless. Erin, thank you so much for being here with me, for being with my listening audience. We got through a good many questions. You are very thorough in your explanation, and your cognitive dissonance is on point. Erin, I wish you the best. And for those of you that are within the sound of my voice, the lady that is on TikTok that was on the handheld scooter that was there, and this is the scoot that you stand up on.
Uh-huh.
She has her son in the back of her, the two child's book bags on the handlebars.
Yes.
Anyone that knows this woman, please WhatsApp me, message me, hit me up on Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, send me a message. We want to do something for her.
And Erin, make sure I share it, because that's a mama. That is Erin, a mommy, baby.
That's what you call a mother.
A mother.
Erin, thank you so much for being with me this evening. You have grounded me this Tuesday. I'm still gonna go and have some popcorn, right? Okay. I can't throw my leg over the man, but I go rest my hand on him a little bit. You know, because this is what I do on Tuesdays. But Erin, thank you so much. And this platform is open to you anytime that you would like to use it.
Thank you.
This has been Kenny's Corner, Guardian 96.9, Fresh News, Smart Talk all day. And I want to say a very special thank you to my engineer. Chris is such a sweetie pie. Chris, whenever you meet this girl, you have to bring her to me, because you use my one good son. Chris is such a sweetie pie. I send Chris the music and Chris has it queued up. He's a good boy. He's a good young man. I love my Chris. So this evening, Chris, you have yourself a good evening. Erin, you have a wonderful week. For those of you that are within the sound of my voice, this is another opportunity to have the conversation, to get it right. Get some popcorn. Put your hand or your foot on top of that man or that woman. It's another sexy Tuesday. Kenny's Corner. Have a wonderful evening.
Deserves royalty, and we've got the perks and cash back to prove it. With 700 Advantage Plus, you'll get 5% cash back, exclusive event invites, VIP perks, and so much more. Ready to claim your crown? Visit our social media pages for the sign up link or swing by any 700 Wines and Spirits location to get royally rewarded today. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 18 plus to join. 700 Wines and Spirits remind you to drink responsibly.